Imagine for a second, you're standing in a warehouse or, maybe a university lab, and there's this 200-pound humanoid robot just working quietly in the corner.
Which honestly is becoming a lot more common these days.
Right, exactly. So suddenly, without any warning at all, the robot just turns and it starts taking full, unrestricted kinetic orders. I mean, walking, grabbing, dropping
It's
things.
just completely hijacked.
Yeah, taking commands from a hacker sitting in a parked car like 60 feet away. And not through some massive Hollywood cyber heist, but because of a tiny, invisible flaw in how the robot listens to Bluetooth.
It sounds totally made up, right? Like science fiction.
It really does. But today, we're looking at a stack of intelligence that proves this is not fiction anymore. I mean, the line between a computer virus and a physical, real-world kinetic attack, that line has just completely vanished.
It really has. Because, for decades we've relied on this comforting binary separation. Like digital threats lived in the abstract world, right? Passwords, firewalls, stolen credit
Right, the
cards.
stuff on your screen.
Exactly. And physical threats lived in the real world with locked doors and security guards. It made the risks feel categorizable. But as our digital infrastructure just aggressively bleeds into the physical environment, that separation is gone.
It's totally gone.
Yeah, we're no longer just risking a data breach. We are talking about hijacked machines, compromised factory floors, and severe hazards to actual human safety.
And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. We've gotten our hands on a massive, incredibly dense evening intelligence dossier from Taking Game Media. It's fresh, dated Monday, August 31st, 2026.
And it covers this exact collapse of the digital-physical boundary.
Yeah. We're going to unpack everything in here for you, from the malware targeting your desktop to compromised hardware straight out of the factory, all the way up to these gigawatt AI data centers maintained entirely by robots.
It's a huge shift.
It really is. And more importantly, we're going to break down what this actually means for your daily security.
Because the attack surface is no longer just the laptop sitting on your desk. The attack surface is the literal environment around you, the machines, the routers, the physical infrastructure.
Wow, yeah.
But to understand how these massive physical systems get compromised, we actually have to start small. We have to start with the single most unpredictable vulnerability in any network.
The human being sitting at the keyboard.
Exactly.
Right. So the dossier kicks off with an alert from Microsoft Security about a new threat they're calling Terminal Fix. It's a social engineering attack, and it targets the human before it ever even touches the physical machine.
Yeah, Terminal Fix is a highly sophisticated evolution of what cybersecurity researchers call a click fix attack. And the mechanics of how it fools you are just brilliantly deceptive.
How so?
While threat actors are creating these malicious websites that serve up a fake Cloudflare turnstile KPTCHA prompt.
Okay, let's unpack this because we all know those little boxes, right? The ones that say, verify you are human before letting you read an article or buy a concert ticket.
Right, everybody sees them every day. But this fake KPTCHA doesn't just ask you to click a box. Under the pretense of a, quote, browser verification error, it actually gives you a string of text and tricks you into copying it.
Wait, it makes you copy text.
Yes, it instructs you to open up Windows Terminal or PowerShell and paste that text in to, quote unquote, fix the browser issue.
I have to push back here, though. I mean, if we're talking about enterprise networks, corporate employees are subjected to endless mandatory security training.
Oh, absolutely.
They're drilled to spot basic phishing emails, shady links, Nigerian prince scams. So why is a fake KPTCHA so incredibly effective at bypassing all of that expensive training? I mean, pasting code into a terminal seems like a huge red flag.
What's fascinating here is how the attackers are exploiting sheer muscle memory and routine exhaustion.
Routine exhaustion.
Yeah, when you see a KPTCHA, your brain immediately categorizes it as a nuisance, not a threat. It's just an administrative hurdle. The user just wants to get to the web page.
They just want to read the article.
Exactly. So when the screen says, browser out of sync, press these two keys to verify, the user isn't thinking about network security. They are just following a troubleshooting prompt from what looks like a highly trusted security vendor.
Okay, so it's like a vampire that can't enter your house unless it's explicitly invited. So it dresses up as the mailman asking for a quick signature on a package.
That is a perfect way to look at it.
You think you're just doing a routine, annoying chore, but you're actually holding the front door wide open.
That is exactly it. And the way the malware behaves once it's inside is where the real technical leap happens. By tricking the user into pasting that command into Windows Terminal, rather than the classic Windows Run dialog box, the malware completely avoids triggering standard security alarms.
Wait, hold on. Why does using Windows Terminal instead of the regular Run box make a difference to the antivirus?
Well, think of traditional heuristic antivirus detection, like a security guard looking for known suspicious behavior. For years, malware usually tried to execute through the Run dialog or, you know, hidden background scripts.
Okay, that makes sense.
So security software heavily monitors those specific pathways. But Windows Terminal is a developer tool. It's designed to run complex, highly privileged commands.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. So when the script goes through the terminal, the security software essentially says, oh, the user is operating a developer tool. They must know what they're doing. And it just lets the script pass.
Wow. So they aren't smashing through a window. They are just walking through the front door wearing an employee badge.
Precisely. And the script you paste is heavily obfuscated. It's essentially written in this scrambled, chaotic format that the security guard doesn't understand, but the computer can decipher perfectly.
Right.
Once it runs, it establishes something called a reverse tunnel backdoor.
A reverse tunnel, meaning instead of the bad guy tunneling in, your computer is tunneling out.
Yes, and this is crucial to understand. Breaking into a modern enterprise firewall from the outside is incredibly difficult. Firewalls are like these massive, fortified walls looking outward.
Right, keeping the bad guys out.
Yeah, exactly. So this malware doesn't even try. Instead, it tells your infected computer to reach out to the attacker server and say, hey, I'm here. What do you want me to do?
Wow.
Because firewalls are generally designed to let internal traffic out, right? Employees need to browse the web, send emails, connect to servers. By establishing the connection from the inside out, the attacker completely bypasses all those inbound perimeter defenses.
That is so sneaky.
From there, they can silently steal credentials, hijack your active browser sessions, and just quietly map out the rest of the company network.
So Terminal Fix relies entirely on tricking a human into making a mistake. But reading through the next section of this dossier, there's a completely different kind of threat.
Oh, yeah. The hardware side.
Right. What happens when human error isn't even part of the equation? What happens when the hardware you buy has a secret door built into it before you even slice the tape on the box?
You're talking about the discoveries by the firmware vulnerability researchers at VulnCheck regarding those ZBT routers?
Yeah. This part genuinely unsettled me. We just talked about firewalls being these massive fortified walls. Well, imagine you go out to the hardware store, you buy a stack of bricks to build your secure perimeter wall, and you build it.
And you feel totally safe.
You feel safe. But what you didn't know is that the manufacturer built a hidden remote-controlled trap door right into the center of the bricks themselves.
That is essentially what happened here. VulnCheck uncovered two pre-installed, undocumented factory implants hidden deep inside the firmware of routers manufactured by Shenzhen Zibitong Electronics.
Which is a major Chinese telecom vendor, right?
Yes, a very large one. And the backdoors are codenamed Speaking Stone and Dark Lantern. That's CVE-2026-74232 and 74233, if anyone's keeping track.
And the dossier explicitly states these implants grant, quote, unauthenticated remote attackers full root administrative shell access.
Yep, that's the phrase.
Can you translate that into plain English for someone who doesn't work in IT? Like, what does that actually give an attacker?
Simply put, it's God mode for the device. And you don't even need a password.
God mode without a password. Great.
Yeah. Unauthenticated means the attacker doesn't need to guess your admin password or bypass a login screen. And root administrative access means they have the absolute highest possible level of control over the device's operating system.
So they can do whatever they want.
Anything. They can rewrite the software, monitor every single piece of data flowing through the router, or use it as a launching pad to attack other devices on your network. They own it completely.
And they're just sitting there, hidden inside the firmware, right out of the shrink wrap.
Yeah.
How do these trapdoors even get activated?
Well, the implants are hard-coded to open what are called hidden listening ports. Think of a listening port like a dog whistle.
Okay, a dog whistle.
The router is silently listening for a very specific frequency, you know, a highly specific packet of network traffic. To normal security software, the router looks completely asleep.
But it's waiting.
Exactly. The moment the attacker sends that specific trigger packet, the backdoor wakes up, decrypts its payload, and just hands over total control.
And just to clarify the scale here, we aren't just talking about a teenager's gaming router in their bedroom, right?
Oh, no. Far from it. These specific Shenzhen ZBT models are heavily deployed in commercial environments. We're talking about retail point-of-sale networks, meaning cash registers, enterprise branch offices, and industrial Internet of Things gateways.
That's a massive footprint.
It is. You have entire factory floors sitting on a foundation that was fundamentally compromised before it even left the assembly line. As Vancek noted, this proves that supply chain threats are being baked directly into silicon. The manufacturer itself is the vector.
Which leads us to the most terrifying transition in this entire stack of intelligence. I mean, if our core network hardware is secretly compromised from the factory, what happens to the physical heavy machinery connected to those networks?
This is where we cross fully from cybersecurity into cyber-physical security. The dossier includes these really comprehensive disclosures from a hardware security researcher named Olivier LaFlemme.
Right.
He analyzed the Unitree G1 EDU humanoid robotic platform.
Here's where it gets really interesting and honestly incredibly visceral. Because this isn't a server sitting quietly in a rack somewhere. It's a humanoid machine with arms, legs, heavy electric motors.
Yeah, the 200-pound robot from your opening example.
Exactly, and the vulnerabilities LaFlemme found. I mean, an attacker doesn't even need to be on your compromised Wi-Fi network to take it over, do they?
No, they don't. The vulnerability lies in the robot's Bluetooth Low Energy, or BLE, implementation.
Like what my headphones use.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
BLE is typically used for short-range communication, like pairing a controller or a diagnostic tool. But LaFlemme discovered structural flaws in two background processes running on the robot's computer. They're tracked as CVE-2026-76639 and 76640.
It's dossier calls them demons, right? Chatgo and Bash Runner.
Yes, demons. If you aren't familiar, a daemon in computing is just a background program that runs silently, waiting to handle requests. Like a stagehand waiting behind the curtain.
Okay, I like that analogy.
But these specific demons on the robot completely fail to validate the data packets they receive over Bluetooth.
Meaning what, exactly? Like swallowing a pill without reading the label?
Exactly like that. When a device receives a data packet, it's supposed to inspect it. It should ask, is this the correct size? Is this command allowed? Are you authorized to send this?
Basic security checks.
Right. But the robot's daemons don't ask any of those questions. So an attacker standing up to 20 meters away, maybe in a parking lot outside the lab, can broadcast specially crafted malicious Bluetooth packets.
Wow.
The robot receives them, blindly trusts them, and executes the code. Instantly, the attacker has unauthenticated root access to the robot's locomotion PC.
The locomotion PC. I mean, that is the literal brain that controls movement. Yeah. So suddenly, a stranger outside the building can manipulate the real-time gyroscope.
Yeah.
They can make this heavy machine fall over or sprint or grab something with its electric joint actuators. Not to mention, they can silently hijack the stereo vision cameras and microphone arrays to spy on whatever room the robot is in.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the exact moment the threat bleeds into physical reality. I mean, as the Cyber-Physical Systems Research Group points out, a server getting hacked risks data confidentiality. You lose some IP or some user emails.
Sure, which is bad, but it's data.
Right. But exploiting a humanoid robot compromises physical safety and mechanical force in the real world. These Unitree robots are actively deployed in academic labs and industrial facilities. An adversary seizing low-level control over a robot's limb actuators is a severe kinetic hazard to human life. It's a completely different paradigm of risk.
It is terrifying when you put it in the context of human spaces. But the dossier also highlights that for massive tech companies, deploying autonomous robots isn't just a quirky experiment or a lab toy anymore.
Not at all.
It's rapidly becoming the only solution to the physical limitations of human beings. Let's look at the infrastructure Meta is building right now.
Yes, according to the reports in the dossier from Ars Technica, Meta has deployed fleets of autonomous multi-axis technician robots across their global hyperscale AI data centers.
Which are just massive.
Unbelievably massive. These aren't human spaces anymore. These are gigawatt-scale computing clusters dedicated entirely to continuously training their Llama AI models.
I think we need to paint a picture of what a gigawatt-scale AI data center actually feels like. Because it is not just a room full of computers.
Oh, no.
From what I've read, the thermal output of running thousands of advanced GPUs simultaneously is just staggering. The ambient temperature can spike to lethal levels. The cooling fans and liquid pumps create a sustained noise level that will literally damage human hearing in minutes.
It's basically an industrial furnace.
Exactly. It's a high-voltage, deafening blast furnace environment. Humans simply cannot safely walk the aisles to do maintenance anymore.
Exactly. The environment is entirely hostile to biology, so Meta had to bring in automated mobile robots. These units operate in perfect coordination with a real-time digital twin of the data center.
A digital twin.
Yeah, a digital twin is basically a flawless, live 3D simulation of the entire building. The robots use advanced spatial computer vision and highly precise robotic grippers to automate everything. They inspect high-density server racks, manage thousands of fiber optic cables, and fix hardware anomalies.
So what does this all mean? The detail that really made my jaw drop is what they call hot swapping. The dossier mentions they are extracting and replacing malfunctioning GPU compute boards.
Right, while the systems are still running.
Yeah, I want to put this in perspective for you listening. These compute modules are incredibly heavy, they are piped full of liquid coolant, and they are drawing massive amounts of electricity. And the robots are swapping them out without powering down the adjacent server blades.
It's unbelievable.
To me, that's like a mechanic changing the engine block of a race car while the car is still driving 200 miles per hour down the track.
Yeah.
It requires a level of physical precision that is almost hard to comprehend.
It's an absolute engineering marvel. To do this, the robots use infrared thermal diagnostic mapping. They can visually map the heat signatures to identify thermal bottlenecks or, you know, microscopic coolant leaks within the dense server racks.
Wow.
They can test and connect multi-terabit optical interconnects with sub-millimeter precision. By removing the slow, fragile human element, Meta has reduced server maintenance downtime from hours down to mere minutes.
So the AI never has to start training.
Exactly. And if you zoom out, there's a fascinating, almost philosophical closed loop here.
How so?
Well, the global demand for artificial intelligence requires massive, dense compute power. That massive compute power creates incredibly hostile physical environments. Those physical environments require autonomous robots to survive and maintain them.
Right.
And those robots ensure near zero disruption, allowing for even more continuous accelerating AI training. The AI demands the hardware, and the robots facilitate the AI. It's a self-sustaining loop.
Which brings up a really practical question. All of this sprawling digital physical infrastructure, from the robotic AI data centers down to the commercial point of sale networks we discussed earlier, it requires an astronomical amount of capital.
Billions and billions of dollars.
Right. It's driven by this insatiable global demand. So who is paying for all of this? How is it being funded and consumed in the real world?
If you look at the money, it's coming from two completely different worlds, but they both point to the exact same structural reality. Let's look at the institutional banking side first.
Okay.
The dossier outlines a major shift in Eurasian commercial banking. Sberbank, which is the absolute largest financial institution in Russia with over 100 million active clients, officially launched corporate lending programs that accept decentralized digital assets as legal collateral.
Wait, really? So massive corporations are backing industrial loans with crypto, like Tether, Ethereum, Bitcoin?
Yes. Under new domestic legislation that legalizes regulated cryptocurrency for international settlement, Sberbank is utilizing these assets to inject immense liquidity into the manufacturing sector.
And that is wild.
It is. For Tether, or USDT, which is a stablecoin pegged to the US dollar, they allow up to an 80% loan-to-value ratio for import-export operations. For Bitcoin and Ethereum, they allow up to 60% of fair market value for tech enterprises.
But why crypto? I mean, why not just use their traditional currency?
During their institutional briefings, Sberbank executives openly expressed skepticism regarding broad commercial demand for the central bank's own digital ruble.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. They noted that corporate enterprises overwhelmingly prefer dollar-denominated stablecoins like Tether. And the reason is utility. It unlocks immediate cross-border liquid capital for supply chain operations without forcing those companies to liquidate their existing physical assets. The market fundamentally chose decentralized utility over state-mandated options.
It is wild to see that level of institutional embrace for digital assets to fund physical manufacturing. But then, on the complete other end of the economic spectrum, we look at the pure consumer side.
Right, the everyday buyers.
Exactly. The dossier tracks the launch of Sony's PlayStation 5 Pro. It hit the market with a standard retail price of $899.99. And immediately, there were massive, highly publicized online boycott campaigns across gamer forums protesting this premium pricing.
People were furious.
Right. The Internet Collective decided it was too expensive and they were supposedly refusing to buy it.
And yet, it completely sold out across all major U.S. retailers in hours.
Not only did it sell out, but the secondary resale market went absolutely crazy. The dossier tracks third-party listings on Amazon reaching between $1,250 and $1,350.
Unbelievable.
People are willingly paying a 45% scalper markup on top of an already premium price. And the driving force. The sheer cultural anticipation for Grand Theft Auto 6.
They just have to have it.
Exactly. Consumers want to experience this one specific video game at maximum next-generation fidelity, and they are willing to pay literally whatever it takes to be hardware ready.
These two data points, the Russian bank and the PS5 Pro, they actually tell the exact same story about market reality versus theoretical models.
Yeah.
Whether it's a massive Eurasian corporation bypassing traditional state currency to secure industrial credit lines with crypto, or a consumer totally ignoring an online boycott to pay a $1,300 premium for a gaming console, the underlying momentum of technological demand is completely unstoppable.
Wow, yes.
The divergence between online protest rhetoric and actual purchasing velocity is staggering.
It really puts everything into perspective. Looking across this entire ticking game evening synthesis, the overarching theme is just glaringly obvious. Mm-hmm. Computing is no longer just basic software on a screen.
Not at all.
It has aggressively expanded into physical robotics, gigawatt AI data centers, and the mission-critical financial rails that fund global supply chains. Mm. Because of that, we can no longer treat security as a digital afterthought.
Absolutely.
Robust cyber-physical defenses and absolute transparency in our hardware supply chains are not just nice-to-haves anymore. They are the fundamental prerequisites for any of this technological expansion to be sustainable.
The threats are simply adapting faster than our legacy defenses. From deceptive PowerShell social engineering that tricks users into bypassing firewalls from the inside out, to unauthenticated root backdoors permanently baked into router silicon at the factory floor, the attack surface is omnipresent.
So, to you listening right now, consider the reality of this highly fragile, interconnected web. The next time you mindlessly click a CAPTCHA verification prompt because you're in a hurry, or you plug a new cheap router into your living room wall, or you scroll past a viral video of a humanoid robot doing a backflip.
Just remember how thin the boundaries truly are.
Exactly. Your personal digital actions and the physical hardware you inherently trust are now inextricably tied to real-world kinetic consequences. That deep, comforting sense of security when you slide the physical deadbolt on your front door. It might be time to start wondering if the lock itself was compromised before you even bought the house.
It raises an incredibly important question to leave you with, especially when we look at the trajectory of where this is all heading. If our most critical high-density digital infrastructure is increasingly being maintained by autonomous robots because humans can no longer survive the environment,
right,
and global corporate supply chains are increasingly being funded by decentralized, programmable digital assets, how long will it be until these AI systems can autonomously fund, purchase, and expand their own physical hardware supply chains completely free of any human intervention at all?